All right, good evening, Chair Gould and Vice Chair Tice, members of the school board, good evening. For those of you that are new tonight, so Ms. Henderson and Ms. Murphy, it is an unusual place for me to be presenting from. I only present from the podium once, maybe twice a year, but always for the budget and the superintendent's proposed budget. And the reason that I do that is because this is one of the most important presentations I think I do of the year, simply because I think more than anything it speaks to our values, what we believe is a school system, and how we want to support our really great work going forward. So before I start this evening, I do want to take just a couple of minutes to thank some people that are here for their extraordinary work and efforts on behalf of the budget, and then welcome a couple of guests that are here as well. And let me start first by thanking Kristen Michael, our Chief Operating Officer, and Michelle Kopic. Michelle Kopic and Kristen Michael, yes, have put in hours and hours on this, burning the midnight oil, crunching numbers, making sure that all of the numbers balance and everything works, and have been extraordinary partners. One of the very fortunate things I have going for me as the superintendent is I get an opportunity to think sort of broadly and trying to be visionary in some of the work that we're doing, and I have a great team around me that really helps us pull all the pieces together. So I want to thank them first and foremost. I also want to welcome a couple of guests. This evening we have two council members with us. I want to thank first Vice Mayor, that's right, sorry, Vice Mayor Hiscott, congratulations on your ascension to that really great position. And also Mary Beth Connolly, sorry, I missed the mayor part, I'm so used to the chair. But also thank you, Mary Beth Connolly, for being here and representing the school board, the city council in our presentation tonight. And then I also want to thank members of our administrative team that are here who are school-based and some of our central office staff that are here. They have been invaluable in this process as well. So let me just start by saying thank you to all of you for the opportunity this evening to present my proposed budget that really is a compilation of a lot of time, energy, and effort that not only is part of the work that we have done with the people that I've mentioned, but also the work of our principals, the work of our teachers, the work of our departments, and the work of our staff. This budget season, as I was heading into it, I have to be perfectly honest, and it's sort of two minds. When I was coming into this, I was quite worried. Some of the board members that have been on the board since last year know that I was nervous and had some trepidation because I was concerned about where our revenue was going to come in, not only our local revenue but also our state revenue. I am filled with relief now and excitement and joy now that the revenue picture has become more clear to us. The revenue picture is not clear, however, by accident. And I want to take just a second to suggest to all of you that are here and also at home that this is the embodiment of what I think this budget represents, the embodiment of what can be done when teams work together to collaborate, to cooperate, and to be visionary. This year's local Falls Church revenue is a consequence of planning that has been done very thoughtfully and with great care over the last several years to really build our city. We've been planning for a long time for the growth that we have picked up over the last year and will to come. We've been planning around the development. We've done that through building a new school and looking at the required resources that are necessary to provide the infrastructure for us to ensure that we remain as one of the top divisions in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And again, for the sixth year running, we have been named as the top school division in Virginia. So that is happening. I want to take a second also this evening to thank the voters that took a chance on us with a bond referendum 6 years ago, and the school board and the city council that agreed to move ahead with their ambitious goals, looking at a school, the development plan that was behind it, and our partners in the general government, along with the city manager, Wyatt Shields. Lastly, I want to thank all of the staff who continue to perform and outperform, not just their own efforts, but continue to outperform in every way across the region and across the Commonwealth. Tonight's budget, from my perspective, is a true celebration of what public schools and public government can do when they work together on behalf of the greater good, which is the city of Falls Church. So we value strongly our partnership. And as previously noted, we are very appreciative of all of the partnerships that we have across the city of Falls Church. As many of you are aware, I think by now, I'm a bit of a stickler with some language. And one of the pieces of language that I get sort of sticky about is that we're the schools, you're the school board, we have the general government, and the general government consists of the city council and our general government partners like Wyatt Shields, our city manager, and the like. And together, we all represent the city. So one thing I want to be really clear about tonight as I present the budget is this really represents, again, sort of a combination of all of us together working collectively on behalf of the entire city of Falls Church. And as a consequence of that, although we each have different statutory authority, we do work together to make sure Falls Church moves successfully and smoothly. And we are very proud to once again, for the sixth year in a row, propose a budget to you, the school board, that falls within the guidance provided by the city council, who is, again, another arm of our city. So let me start with just a couple of slides that I know the board is familiar with, but I want to take just a second for those folks that may be at home and watching or may watch this in the future, because it really does speak to what guides our work here in the City of Falls Church. And we are in the second year of implementation around our strategic plan. I won't read these statements to you, but I think that they're important to suggest what we're about when we think about being a school, that we're not just, you know, having kids come in, we're visionary. We are part of the International Baccalaureate program, and we are preparing students to be responsible and caring and internationally minded. And what we're seeing is that's being borne out in a variety of ways. So we've got our mission, we've got our vision, and then we move to our core values. And these core values really speak to, I think, where we land along with our collective commitments with respect to this budget. We are a student-centered organization. Every decision that we make is based on the best interest of the students that we serve. As a collective, we are responsive and accountable, not only financially, academically, but also personally and through communications. We pride ourselves on excellence in academics and academic success. We believe strongly in inclusion and diversity. And as a community, we believe that all of this work is predicated on great connections with our families, with our students, and with our teachers, which leads us to our collective commitments. And these commitments, you've seen these before, but for the good of the cause, I think that they're really important to reiterate. And the first is, you know, we keep students at the center. The second is that we believe that making sure we have the highest quality teachers in the classroom and the highest quality staff on our operations teams will help us be successful to ensure that we have high quality learning across our division. We believe that we should be working with students in an individualized way to meet their personal goals and their achievements to the best of their abilities. We believe we need to remain competitive in the marketplace to ensure that we have the best and brightest that are coming to Falls Church, that we have a multi-tiered systems of support. So in case a student is falling down, we have a very clear response to what happens when a student is struggling, and that is done through that multi-tiered system of support. We believe in social-emotional learning and mental health. And we have put a lot of resources into that since the pandemic, particularly as students are returning to school after a couple of years. We believe strongly in a caring community and a welcoming culture, that we are compassionate and active lifelong learners. We're responsive to the current needs, not only within our community, but in our surrounding community, as well as the global community. And lastly, we believe that we need to interrogate and dismantle structural racism wherever we see it. So these commitments land us with five strategic focus areas. And for purposes of the budget, I think it's important for the board and the community to know that each one of the budget items that you'll see tonight, and all of those budget items that were presented to us by schools and school staff, were tied specifically to one of these strategic focus areas. It's either around IB-infused teaching and learning, wellness, equity and belonging, resource management and continuous improvement, communication and engagement, or investing in our people. If anyone is interested in seeing how we're doing, we would invite them to go to our Measuring Our Progress page on the website to see. It's a very transparent process that we have in place, and each of these focus areas has some key actions associated with it, and we believe that this budget will allow us to continue to build upon those successes that we've experienced as part of our progress in our new strategic plan. So let me begin with enrollment. Of course, enrollment is always where we start our budget process, is seeing who are we going to be serving. And I want to start with current enrollment. And there's a couple of things that I want to point out to you, and this is going to be a hard chart for you to read from the dais. But there's one or two particular numbers that I want to call your attention to. And the first is, it's the second to last third to last column, which is the FY 2024 actual enrollment. And these enrollment data were collected on September 30th of this year. And you'll see that that number is 2,656. That's the number of students that we had on September 30th. I want to tell you that those are the numbers that we look at first, but those have changed. Since September 30th, we've actually gained 22 more students, and our current enrollment as of today is 2,678. And I think that that's important to note that we continue to grow. From these numbers, however, the second to last column at the bottom shows that we have an 82 student variance from what our projection was. So this time last year, when we came forward, we thought that there were going to be 82 students less than what we have today. And that was based on some information that we got from the Weldon Cooper Center. And I just want to let everyone on the dais know, and at home also, that that variance with projection now is 104, and that the variance in the total student population is 122, not 100. So we have 122 students more than we had last year. Are you all seeing the presentation okay on your computers? Okay, good. All right. So then we look at, in terms of current enrollment, where are we seeing some of those bumps? And you'll look at the last column here, and you'll see at JTP, Jesse Thackeray Preschool, we've got Amanda Davis with us tonight. We have 10 more students at JTP than we had last year. We have 23 more students at Mount Daniel. Thanks, Tim Kasich, for being here tonight. We have 31 more students at Oak Street Elementary that Kareem Doherty has been working with. Steve Pickering, thank you for being here tonight. We have 30 more students at Mary Ellen Henderson, and Peter Laub's group at Meridian High School, there are about six more students there. So what we're seeing is some pretty significant growth, particularly in the elementary grades and a little bit on the secondary campus, but not to the extent that we're seeing it at the elementary. In terms of student services, and this is who are we serving and what special needs might there be beyond just a routine student that comes into our system that doesn't need any special services. And a couple of things I want to point out in this chart is from the end column, you'll see where we are currently, the change from the prior year in the third column from the last, and then as a percentage from the prior year, and our totals. So what you'll see here is our economically disadvantaged, when we took these data on September 30th, was 308 students are currently economically disadvantaged, which means those students are receiving free and reduced lunch. That number since the September 30th date has actually gone up to 312, but this represents roughly 12% of our population. In terms of students with disabilities, we had 356 on September 30th. We're now at 380 students with disabilities that have been identified, and that's about 14% of our total population, but it's a growth of about 6% overall. Students with 504s, these are students that do not have an IEP but have some sort of need for modification and accommodation. And currently we have 200 students on September 30th, but now we have 221 students that are receiving services through a 504. And then English speakers of other languages, on September 30th, we had 139. And as of today, we have 158. So we're seeing more ESOL students coming as well. And that represents about 6% overall of our population. The other information that we share in here is where are we with our homeschool students. We do have parents that register with us each year to be able to provide homeschooling for their students, and we're seeing this year 34 students, which is a net reduction of 3 from the prior year, which gets us closer to where we were pre-pandemic. And then tuition students, this does not include tuition students at Jesse Thackeray Preschool, but we currently have 25 students that are on a tuition agreement with us, which is a growth of about 7 across the system. In terms of a graphical representation, you'll see these stack bars. These stack bars are actually by grade level, and you'll see that our high water mark was in 2017-18. We dropped during the pandemic, and we're starting to see that build towards the tail end of the right-hand side of these stack bars. So where do these data come from in terms of our projection? And we start with in a place where we have traditionally started, and that is at the Weldon Cooper Center at the University of Virginia. And the Weldon Cooper Center has been a great partner with us for many, many years. They look particularly at birth data. They look at cohort movement from grade level to grade level. But the one thing that they don't do in their projections is they don't include new housing stock. Now, that's important in the city of Falls Church because we are seeing some significant housing stock coming online as we speak. So we really felt it important this year to have another partner that can come in and help support us with really knowing and drilling down into where are the students coming from and what do we project for the future. So enter the Stephen Fuller Institute. And the Stephen Fuller Institute is a joint venture between the general government and the schools and the school board to identify which students will be coming. So we are looking at student generation ratios and growth that are based on a number of factors now, to include birth data, cohort data, but we are now looking at it through the lens of what our current housing stock is going to look like when some of the development that is almost done comes online. So think of it as a combo platter. We're looking at the birth data, the cohort data, and the housing data. And this combo platter really allows us to get a better picture of the current state of play within what I would consider an extraordinarily dynamic environment of growth. So here's the enrollment forecast in a graphical or a line graph. There are a couple of things I want to point out here to make sure that everybody's clear about what we're looking at. The green represents where are we today. That is our growth up to that very dark vertical line right in the middle of the graph. The dotted line that you see is if, and where you'll see that dip is 2019-2020, right? The green line dipped pretty tremendously. And that was because of COVID. If COVID hadn't happened and we continued to grow at the rate we were growing previously, we would be on that dotted line. And that we would see that trend in our growth. However, the students that left during COVID, many of them didn't come back for a variety of reasons. And so we needed to look at a different methodology to understand where we are. So what you'll see is the red line, and the red line is simply the Weldon Cooper line. If we only looked at Weldon Cooper alone, we would follow that red line for growth. The dotted line you'll see above continues to grow, and then that blue line is what we consider to be the most likely scenario. This is the combination of birth data, housing data, cohort data, et cetera. So we are really banking on, if you will, that blue line for where we see our growth moving forward. So when we think about where are we going to be in terms of projections in September 30th, for next year, our projection is 2,719 students. This is 85 more than our actual enrollment, and it's 185 more than what we had on September 30th of this year. So we are seeing, again, pretty significant growth within a 2-year period of roughly 185 to 200 students. which is about between 7.3% and 7.5% growth. This is not an insignificant number in a small school division like ours. It has impact. But I want to assure the board and those folks that are listening at home that we have the facilities, we have the space, we have renovated buildings. Mount Daniel has been renovated recently and added to. Oak Street has recently been renovated. We, not too long ago, bought Jesse Thackeray. We've got a relatively new school, all things considered, in the last 20 years at Mary Ellen Henderson, and we have a brand new high school. So we knew it was coming. And so because we knew it was coming, we have definitely planned accordingly. Which leads us then, knowing that that's going to be our growth, to what is the proposed revenue? So where is the money going to come from? And this was where my nervousness came earlier in this year when I was sharing with the former school board as a whole. And let me start by saying again how much we appreciate and are thankful for the incredible collaboration with our general government partners and with the City Council. The budget should, and in my opinion does, as part of their guidance, provide an option for a penny reduction on the tax rate. This was their guidance to us on December 11th. That tax rate was forecasted several years ago as we modeled what it would look like if we did the economic planning around building the new high school. We did forecast that we would do a penny reduction on the tax rate, or the council would do a penny reduction on the tax rate. This budget that I've prepared for you tonight would allow for that penny reduction on the tax rate. It supports compensation and supports retention and supports recruitment of our teaching and faculty. That was part of the City Council's guidance as they came out with that on December 11th. We have met, in my opinion, every benchmark that was set by the City Council in their guidance to us. In addition to that, I believe that we've met every bit of guidance that you all shared with us as part of our work session that we had together. And for redundancy, just because I think it's important, this again is the sixth time, we will come in with a budget that is within organic guidance and in the spirit of the revenue sharing agreement, showing full cooperation with our partners in the city government. So let's talk about local funding and sort of where we are with our revenue sharing agreement. Based on the preliminary revenue forecast that was presented to us at our joint board and city council meeting on December 4th, we are anticipating that the tax revenue growth in the city as a whole is going to be 8%. That represents an additional $7.5 million in revenue into the city. If we look at that in the context of our revenue sharing agreement, which we have, that means that the Falls Church City Public Schools would receive $3.75 million to work with as new revenue as we go forward. The state revenue is a slightly different picture. We see the state revenue that has been presented in the most recent budget that was put out by the governor as a significant loss, not only to the Falls Church City Public Schools, but also a reduction to public education across the board. We are not seeing the dollars flowing in like we have from the state in the past, but I will also share with you, with a new House and a new Senate working together in Richmond, it remains to be seen what will happen with the state budget. However, we can only base our budget tonight, or the superintendent's budget tonight, on what we know is to be true today. And one thing we know to be true today is that we have a great revenue sharing relationship with the City Council. And the governor's budget is, in my opinion, not kind to pre-K-12 public education. So some other revenue sources that we are able to look at to help round out what we have to work with going forward is we are seeing about $37,000 in new revenue from the federal government. And those primarily flow through IDEA, which is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, Title I, Title II, Title III. Those are students that are in poverty. Those are professional development dollars, and those are ESOL dollars, respectively. And we're also seeing federal funding of $666,000 that reflects an increase of 5.9% primarily due to IDEA and career and tech funding increases. So our overall increase, though, from the federal government that we will receive this coming year is an additional $37,000 of revenue. As normal, as normal course of our budgeting, we do take some of our year-end balance and pour it towards the beginning balance. And we have traditionally put forth between $400,000 and $450,000 of beginning balance and poured it into, or ending balance and poured it into beginning balance. We intend to do that again. The reason that there's a zero on the right-hand side is because we're not going to increase that. We intend to just keep it at $450,000 of beginning balance. And then other revenue that we receive is interest and tuition revenue and some fees that we collect. So when we pull all those other revenue sources together, that represents a $1.3 million additional revenue source that we can look at. So when we look at our annual pie chart, and I know some of you love this pie chart. I love this pie chart. We are heavily dependent on our relationship with the Falls Church City Council and our friends in the general government. In fact, 81% of our budget comes from, in FY25, will come from the local government. Our state revenues will account for 15%, and all other revenues will make up the additional 4% that's missing. So when you look at that in sum total, on the left-hand side, in that chart, you will see that we have $4.1 million of new revenue to work with as we begin building our budget. So where are we going to put our money? And this is the million-dollar question that I think everybody around our system is waiting to hear. And the first is, I think it's really important that we double down a little bit on the fact that we do look at the priorities within the strategic plan that was adopted by the school board 2 years ago as our North Star. We believe that those need to be where we're putting our money, because that is a document that was brought, that was built by the community and for the community. Then the next three were important to you as a board that I think we wanted to make sure that we used as a filter also. And it also came from connections, not just with the board, but with school leadership, our teachers, and our staff, who all of our school leaders met with and had conversations about with respect to the budget, and community members, was maintenance of current programming, or maintenance of effort, if you will, and services, looking at investments needed to remain competitive, and then lastly, investments in our future. So when we think about maintenance of current programs and services, let's start with enrollment growth. And let me start with small class sizes. Small class sizes in the city of Falls Church has been a hallmark trait of what separates us from the rest of the region. We staff at 22-1 at the lower elementary schools, and we staff at 24-1 at the upper elementary school and secondary. Most school divisions in the region staff between 28-1 and 30-1. As a consequence of that, we have small class sizes, and we are dedicated to making sure that we keep those class sizes small. And the reason for that is we are relational, we care about our kids, we know our families, we know our students, and we can meet their needs. To maintain those staffing levels and be consistent with what I would consider are our values as a school system, we need to increase staffing to meet the enrollment growth that I've shared with you earlier. So we're proposing in this budget 5 new elementary teachers and 1 new secondary teacher and 2 new half-time paraprofessionals. And if you go back and think about that chart that I shared with you earlier, you'll note where most of the growth was falling. And this is, and we are able to track it by cohort now and see where those areas of expansion are, and are able to adequately serve those areas with those 5 new teaching positions at the elementary, 1 new at the secondary, and 2 additional paraprofessionals. This will be a challenge, I think, in a tough environment, not just not just in the state, but nationally, with respect to the national teacher shortage. But one of the things that I'm pleased to say to you is that we are trying desperately to secure and sort of move around that by securing people early. We've been working very closely with Amy Hall from our Human Resources Department and Kristen Michael and others to make sure that we're offering early contracts and early hires to those people that we learn of, that we know are good, that we can bring into our system. We are growing our own. We have a really great group of folks that are going through NOVA and then through George Mason to get their teaching credential. At a convocation 3 years ago, I made a promise to three students that were graduating, that were going off to become teachers, that when they graduated, we would at least interview them and probably give them a job. So we are excited to have some of those folks come back too. But the other part of it that's more budget related is that in this budget, when we get to compensation, you will see that one of the things we're committed to is compensating our people well, not just for retention, but also for recruitment. And then leveraging the really great relationships that we have with our friends in the Falls Church Ed Foundation. One of the things that I love to talk about when I interview every single new teacher that comes into the system, and one of the things that I'm always excited to tell them about is the fact that we have an Ed Foundation that provides a whole nother level of support through grant funding to really give them a sense of the spirit of innovation and ingenuity that they can leverage here in the City of Falls Church. So we are working desperately to move through some of those challenges that we may face hiring an additional, and this represents 8 new people to our system. Some other places that we think are really important for us to maintain our current programs and services. And these positions are becoming permanent that had been previously funded with one-time money. The first is we have a math resource teacher at the elementary school. That math resource teacher at the elementary school has made incredible inroads with our teaching of mathematics, with some of the changes that have come through from the state of Virginia. And that math resource teacher we are proposing becomes a permanent addition to the staff. We are looking at an additional secondary counselor. You may be aware at the secondary campus during COVID or post-COVID, we were able to hire through COVID funding a second, not a second, but an additional secondary counselor. This counselor has been extraordinary in bridging the gap between the middle school and the high school and helping with transition, and we are proposing that we make that position permanent. We are also proposing that we make the advanced academics teacher, which is the second teacher at Oak Street in advanced academics, a permanent position. This was funded through one-time money last year. The position wasn't filled until December of this last year, but after having it filled now and seeing the value of it, we really believe that a second advanced academics teacher at Oak Street will be really significant in helping build our program there. We also are proposing that we add the assistant principal of student support at the secondary campus as a permanent position. And lastly, we are looking at doing some contract length extensions and adjustments that had been done previously through one-time money, but making them permanent. And these are for our special education administrators and for our division-wide instructional directors. Some other things that we have on our proposed list of items that we will continue, but only with one-time money until more money becomes available, is additional school psychology services, a teacher for English speakers of other languages that has been in place at the middle school. We'd like to continue that for another year. And then the advanced academic coordinator. This is a person that we pay hourly that helps us. We don't have the money in the budget this year to do these three positions as permanent, recurring positions, but we do have one-time money. We'd like to continue it for another year and work towards funding for that, those three positions into the future. Lastly, with respect to maintenance of current programs and services, these are some fixed costs that we simply can't avoid. The first is a 10% increase we are projecting for our insurance. This is the employer and the employee rate representing $405,000, looking at additional costs for insurance of $25,000, and then other utility costs of up to about $248,000. You never do a budget without looking behind the screen to see, are there some reductions that we can take, or are there areas that we can find some dollars as well? We do propose the reduction of a central office position. That would realize about $171,000, and that's a fully loaded, meaning benefits included, position. We also are anticipating a rate reduction with the Virginia Retirement System of $463,000. And then we thank you to Michelle Kopic, who has really looked at our salary files and drawn those down right down to the penny. And we believe that we're going to realize about $300,000 in salary savings and turnover. So you might say, where did that come from? So that means that we may have had a teacher that retired at the end of last year that's been with us for 30 years. And in exchange for that teacher, we hired somebody with 5 years of experience. There's a differential in that salary, and those dollars in differential become captured as part of our salary savings and turnover. We might have had a position that was unfilled for an extended period of time. Those dollars are still in the budget, but they weren't being paid out to someone, so those become salary savings and turnover. So we are anticipating about $300,000. So this is about $900,000 in backside savings that we intend to take that will be helpful for us to balance the budget. There are a number of things that we believe are really important for us to be able to invest in our future and remain competitive in this increasingly competitive environment of Northern Virginia, and again, Virginia and across the country with respect to teachers. So we are proposing that everyone who is eligible for a step increase receive their step increase. And when I say everybody, I mean everybody, whether you're a bus driver, food service worker, teacher, assistant principal, principal, and so on, we believe that everyone should get a step increase. That represents a 2.5% increase over last year's step. Additionally, we're proposing a 3.5% salary adjustment as part of a cost of living adjustment. This is really important for us for a number of reasons. One is that there are a number of surrounding jurisdictions that gave a 2% mid-year COLA this year that you may have read about as part of the governor's plan as part of the second year of the biennium. We simply were not able to do the 2% cost of living adjustment like some other surrounding jurisdictions. And the reason for that is, and I know the board knows this, but for others that may not know, the money that we get from the state to do a 2% cost of living adjustment is 20% of what it costs for us to do a 2% cost of living adjustment. So, for example, if a cost of living adjustment at 2% costs us $1 million as a school division, the state gives us $200,000, and we are required to come up with $800,000 to do that 2% addition. This mid-year, we were not able to do that, and so rather than look at simply the CPIW, which is the Consumer Price Index workers number, which would be 3.2%, we did bump it up to 3.5%, which ultimately and in turn results in an overall 6% a salary adjustment for all of our employees on average across the system. We're also including $16,000 in here for some scale realignment. And these are school special education administrators and division-wide instructional coordinators that are going to be reclassified from the teacher scale to the leadership team scale in alignment with their responsibilities and their position classifications. We've included in this budget, let me start with this. As the board and the community are aware, the FCCEA recently unionized, and we have negotiated a contract that is not public yet, but has a number of tentative agreements in that contract. What we promised to the FCCEA is that if we were able to complete our negotiations by December 1st, that we would put placeholders in the budget for those items that we would that had economic impact. Again, the contract's not ready for ratification by the FCCEA or the school board. There are a number of cleanup edits that need to be done. We're very close. But these items represent those tentative agreements that were made with the union that we feel are important to include in the school's budget. The first is a retirement contribution match of $150,000, longevity steps that were added to the salary scale of $36,000. We're increasing homebound teacher pay, which will cost us about $21,000. And we are making the registrar at Henderson who is the only registrar that's not on a 12-month contract, a 12-month contracted employee. That retirement contribution match, just for the good of the school board and those that may be listening at home, is the schools and the superintendent will match a 1% of a base salary for those employees that have a 403B or a 457. And let me rephrase that. We will match up to 1% for those employees that have a 457 or a 403B. So some investments in our future. We are past the negotiation stage with the union contract, and we need someone to help us manage that contract. Specifically, we need someone who will help us develop standard operating procedures in a new environment of being unionized. We need someone who will help us meet with the union in the quarterly meetings that have been set up to help us communicate effectively through the schools and with the administration. We need someone who can help us with training for staff and administrators on how to implement a union contract for the first time. And we also need someone who will help us with hearing and grievance procedures should those arise. Lastly, and from a purely parochial position, we need someone who will allow the superintendent, the chief academic officer, and the chief operating officer the ability to do our work, to be out in schools and working with our staff rather than working through grievance procedures, working through the manuals of standard operating procedures and the like. Therefore, as a consequence of that, we are proposing a new labor relations director position that will help liaise between schools, the union, and help support the ongoing education necessary for us to engage in union activities for the first time. We are proposing $12,000 in additional EPEDs, or extra pay for extra duties. We have three new. One is for webmaster stipends for our K-12 schools. The next is for a chemical safety stipend at the high school for our science department. And lastly, at Meridian for our new CP program, to be able to provide a stipend to that person who is going to coordinate that CP program. We've included $104,000 in additional money for textbooks and instructional materials. And lastly, we're looking at $12,000 in materials and supplies for our preschool. And the reason that some of those numbers are on the left and some of those numbers are on the right, those that are on the left are recurring costs. Those that are on the right are through one-time funding that we have. So what does this all mean in terms of proposed budget expenditures? And here are the totals. We have $4,161,664 of revenue coming in that can be recurring, and we have the same number of dollars in recurring costs. We also have, in the amount of $155,000, one-time funding that we are going to expend, and $156,000 in additional funding that's coming from the remaining portion of the federal pandemic funds that we have partnered with our general government partners on throughout the last couple of years. So here's what the budget expenditures look like with respect to our favorite pie charts. And I want to lead with 86% of the dollars in this proposed budget go to staff. They go to our people. We are a people-driven organization, and as a consequence of that, we believe that's where our money should go. Additional funds will go to materials and supplies, utilities, insurance, travel, rental, capital replacements, and then transfers and reserves. So in closing, I am, as the superintendent, required to provide to the school board a needs-based budget. And sometimes that needs-based budget aligns with the priorities that have come out. Sometimes it doesn't. Tonight, I'm really proud to say that this is a needs-based budget that reflects the highest priorities that came from the school board, our principals, our staff, and the guidance from the city council. It falls within guidance and organic growth, again, for the sixth year in a row. It's an overall 6.8% increase over last year's budget, which is healthy and really good. We believe that it takes at least 4% each year above and beyond what the prior year was to at least allow for growth in salaries and the like. And I will say unabashedly that we are really proud of this budget. We took into account everyone's input, we listened deeply, and we've met the spirit of what everyone has asked for. So the budget calendar is in here, and you'll see there are a couple of dates that are particularly of importance that are coming up. The first is that we will have a budget work session and your adoption of the advertised budget on February 27th. And what that means is between now and February 27th, you have an opportunity to ask questions, get some answers, we'll have work sessions, and then on the 27th, it's no longer the superintendent's proposed budget, it then becomes the school board's advertised budget. Then on April 1st, our new board chair, Dr. Gould, will go to the city council along with myself and others to present the school board's budget to the city council. And then from there, the city council will do their work. Your work will be done. We will have then incorporated the school board's budget into the city council's budget. And then there's a public hearing, a work session, and a final adoption of the city's overall budget on May 14th. May 13th. And then on May 14th, we will all come back together and adopt, hopefully, the final school budget. At that point, we will be able to provide contracts to our teachers, and we are off to the races at that point, moving forward into budgeting loading the budget for the following year. So let me talk about a little bit more information. I would request that our school board members, after tonight, or tonight and beyond, submit your questions directly to me with a copy to the chair and to the vice chair. What we will do is we will do what we've done in the past. We will take those questions, we'll answer them, we'll number order them. So you'll see a listed copy of all of the questions that have been asked and those responses. And then at work sessions, we will ask you if you have any clarification of any of the questions that or responses that were provided to you. And if there aren't any, then we'll continue the conversation around the budget. We also will provide for the community, for our friends at the press and others, all of the budget documents that are available, including the questions and answers, and those will be on our budget webpage. This will be the seventh year of an extremely transparent process that we are very pleased with and excited to do the work. So with that, that was a little longer than I anticipated, but you know me. I want to just thank you. I want to thank you again for your incredible support, the work that you've done to get us to where we are now. I have said this before, and I sort of am going to knock on wood when I say this, but I believe what we've presented to you tonight is the best budget that we've ever had in the time that I've been the superintendent here. We're able to meet the spirit of everything that we're trying to do with compensation, retention, recruitment, growth, development, all the things that we heard as we went around and spoke to everyone that was available within our city schools. So with that, Chair Gould, I'll turn it back to you, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. I don't want to have a chilling effect on this evening's questions, but I would say if you could kind of keep them at a high level, that would be good. And then if there are more weedy questions, we'd be happy to take those as questions that we can put into a document and be part of our initial pass at some of those questions and answers.
Thank you, Dr. Noonan. Thank you for the detail of the budget. And obviously, we appreciate it. You know, half the presentation was about our core values, our strategy, or where we're going as a mission, as an organization, and how that budget fits that and supports that. And I think that's a great story that we all want to keep adhering to. So it's a great bar. I will pause here, and as Dr. Noonan said, we'll have a number of school board meetings to go through detailed questions, but are there any high-level comments or questions from the board at this time? Dr. Ortiz.
Hi, Dr. Noonan. Thank you for the presentation, and especially for the exceptional amount of detail regarding the motivation behind all the various components of it. So this will be, I promise, a high-level question. You had a chart on students with, let's just say, different needs, you know, and how that's grown and changed over the course of the last year, and also where you're expecting it to go. Could you shed a little bit of light, and within the federal as well as state law, there are requirements regarding certain services we have to provide. Falls Church City Public Schools has prided itself on not just meeting the minimum of the law, but also meeting those students with what they actually need. And so if you could shed a little bit of light on how you build in actual student needs with respect to some of those in some of those areas into the budget, I think that would be helpful for folks to know.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for that question, Dr. Ortiz. Can we go back to that slide, perhaps? I've got the clicker. Maybe I'll go back to that slide because I want to make sure that I'm referencing the right one. So let me start here. I think this is the question that you were asking about. So this is the slide that really speaks to the very diverse group of people that we have in our community, whether they're students with disabilities, students that are economically disadvantaged, and the like. And I think let me start at a high level and kind of take it down a level. Let me start by saying that the Code of Virginia requires that we meet what are called the standards of quality that are put out there as part of legislation and from the state board that say for every X number of students, you need to have a school counselor. For every X number of students, you need to have a teacher in the classroom and a paraprofessional. For every X number of students, you need to have a school nurse or an assistant principal or whatever the case may be. If we were to follow simply those standards of quality, we would have an extraordinarily smaller staff. And the reason for that is that we exceed what is required by the state, sort of to your point, in terms of those standards of quality. One of the ways that we exceed those standards of quality is by staffing our lower elementary schools at 22-1 and our upper elementary, middle, and high at 24-1. The standards of quality numbers for staffing are much greater than that. We have a number of counselors beyond what the standards of quality require for us from Virginia. So that gets to, just as an example, our school counselors are responsible for the development of and the implementation of our students' 504 plans. So if a student comes in and has diabetes, they're going to get a health care plan, and they're also potentially going to get a 504 plan to make sure that that student has access to food whenever they need it, can get up and go to the bathroom without any problem. We might have someone who comes in that maybe doesn't qualify for an IEP because there's not a discrepancy between their performance and where they're tested, but perhaps maybe has some executive functioning issues and may, for example, have attention deficit disorder. With that diagnosis, they may not get an IEP, but they might get a 504 plan. Because of the numbers of students we have, and I'm sort of using 504 as an example, the number of 504 students that we have, nearly 15% of our students are on a 504 plan, we need to staff at a greater level than what the standards of quality require. So if you look at the numbers of counselors, for example, in the Falls Church City Public Schools, we exceed that number by 4, 5, 6, based on what the standards of quality require. The second area that I'll call to your attention is English speakers of other languages. We currently have, on this page, 139, but we now know it's 155. And the standards of quality and the staffing ratios for elementary and middle and high are much greater than what we staff at. So I believe we have, I don't want to say with assurity, but I want to say that we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 6.5 to 7.5 ESOL teachers in the schools across our division of 2,700 students. Most school divisions, and that means that we're staffing, if you take that number of 139 and divide it by 7, we're staffing at a really, really small number of students. Most school divisions are staffing at somewhere between 30 and 40 kids per ESOL teacher, which means that the services that they're getting in the larger school divisions or different school divisions is going to be greatly reduced. So we're very tight on making sure that our ESOL kids, our 504 kids, our students with disabilities, and our economically disadvantaged kids are taken very good care of through essentially staffing at a more rich level than we would otherwise. But there's also, and again, I asked you not for weedy questions, and then I give you a weedy answer. I apologize for that. But there's also what happens in the classroom, right? And we know that not every student comes to our school, that not all students learn at the same time, at the same rate. If you ask a student to have a project done by 2 weeks from today, some of the students might make that, some of the students might not, based on their individual learning styles, their plan, their executive functioning skills, their disability, their ability to speak English as their second language, whatever the case may be. But what happens in the classroom, and I think that this is what sets Falls Church City apart, is that our teachers are extraordinarily empathic, relational, understand our kids at a deeper level than many of the school divisions that I've been in. And the reason for that is because those class numbers are small.
Very good. Thank you so much. And I think all that whole description goes directly to the commitment to equity and inclusion that is part of the strategic plan. So I really appreciate the description, and we'll look forward to getting into the details, as you say.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Ortiz. Other questions or comments from the board? Okay. Dr. New, we appreciate the presentation. We also appreciate how this was built. I think that's something that the public doesn't get to see, and we're looking forward to, obviously, there's representation from our schools, from Mr. Kasich, Mr. Pickering, and Ms. Davis here. We look forward to and appreciate you all inviting us to your schools so we can be part of the presentations that Dr. New will be doing with your staff, and we look forward to being part of that. And it should go without saying that Ms. Michael, Ms. Kopic, the amount of work that you all do to put this budget together for us to understand it, and we all have it here, and it's quite, that is yours, and it's very thick, but it's very to be able to process all of this is such a high bar for how you all do this and walk us through it, and us being the community, not just the school board. So we really appreciate all the time that you've spent, and we're looking forward to digging into this over the next several meetings. So
great,
thank you, Dr.
Can I say one more thing?
Yes, sir.
And that is that we do have a one-page budget at a glance document that I believe you all have in your binders that we will be distributing broadly, that sort of gives the high-level overview of the budget, sort of shows what's in the superintendent's proposed budget. And then once you adopt your budget, we'll modify that as necessary, and we will have that available as well.
Okay.
But it's a nice overview document that has, of course, the pie charts in it, but also a description of what's being funded, where the revenue's coming from, and the like.
Perfect.
So please use it as you see fit.
We still encourage everyone in the public to read the larger document as well, but yes, we'll reference that. Thank you for bringing that up.